A dramatic reading of Yasmin Abdel-Mageed's rebuttal to Lionel Shriver's speech, in which she claimed that she hoped the fad of attacking things on the ground of cultural appropriation ends quickly. I'm reading from the rebuttal, although occasionally I will add my interlineations, which you should recognize as being from me, not from Ms. Abdel-Mageed. Here goes. I have never walked out of a speech, or I hadn't, until last night's opening keynote for the Brisbane Writers Festival, delivered by the American author Lionel Shriver, best known for her novel, We Need to Talk About Kevin. We were 20 minutes into the speech when I turned to my mother, sitting next to me in the front row. Mama, I can't sit here, I said, the corners of my mouth dragging downwards. I cannot legitimize this. My mother's eyes bore into me, urging me to remain calm, to follow social convention. I shook my head, as if to shake off my lingering doubts. As I stood up, my heart began to race. I could feel the eyes of the hundreds of audience members on my back, questioning, querying, judging. Or if they're me, thinking, oh, poor thing, she needs to use the restroom in the middle of a speech. Anyway, I turned to face the crowd, lifted up my chin, and walked down the main aisle, my pace deliberate. Look back into the audience, a friend had texted me moments earlier, and let them see your face. The faces around me blurred as my heels thudded against the gray plastic of the floor, harmonizing with the beat of the adrenaline pumping through my veins. My mind was blank, save for one question. How is this happening? So what did happen? What did Shriver say in her keynote that could drive a woman who has heard every slur under the sun to discard social convention and make such an obviously political exit? Her question was, or could have been, an interesting question. What are fiction writers, quote, allowed, unquote, to write, given they will never truly know another person's experience? Not every crime writer is a criminal, Shriver said, nor is every author who writes on sexual assault a rape. Fiction, by its very nature, she said, is fake. There is a fascinating philosophical argument here. Instead, however, that core question was used as a straw man. Shriver's real targets were cultural appropriation, identity politics, and political correctness. It was a monologue about the right to exploit the stories of, quote, others, unquote, simply because it is useful for one's story. Shriver began by making light of a recent incident in the U.S. where students faced prosecution for what was argued by some as, quote, casual racial and ethnic stereotyping and cultural insensitivity, close quote, at a Mexican-themed party. Quote, can you believe, close quote, Shriver asked at the beginning of her speech, quote, that these students were so sensitive about the wearing of sombreros, close quote. The audience, compliant, chuckled. I started looking forward to the point in the speech where she was to subvert the argument. It never came. On and on it went. Rather than focus on the ultimate question around how we can know an experience we have not had, the argument became a tirade. It became about the fact that a white man should be able to write the experience of a young Nigerian woman, and if he sells millions and does a, quote, decent, unquote, job in the eyes of a white woman, he should not be questioned or pilloried in any way. It became about mocking those who asked people to seek permission to use their stories. It became a celebration of the unfettered exploitation of the experiences of others under the guise of fiction. It was a poisoned package wrapped up in arrogance and delivered with condescension. As the chuckles of the audience swelled around me, reinforcing and legitimizing the words coming from behind the lectern, I breathed in deeply, trying to make sense of what I was hearing. The stench of privilege hung heavy in the air, and I was reminded of my, quote, place, unquote, in the world. See, here is the thing. If the world were equal, this discussion would be different. But alas, that utopia is far from realized. It's not always okay if a white guy writes a story of a Nigerian woman because the actual Nigerian woman can't get published or reviewed to begin with. It's not always okay if a straight white woman writes the story of a queer indigenous man, because when was the last time you heard a queer indigenous man tell his own story? I'm going to interlineate here with the story from last year about the prestigious Best American Poetry Anthology, which had a poem by Yi Fen Chu, a Chinese man, except his name was Michael Derek Hudson, a white man from Indiana, who was unable to get his poems accepted under his own name, so resorted to a nom de plume that happened to be Chinese. Anyway, back to the story. How is it that said straight white woman will profit from an experience that is not hers, and those with the actual experience never be provided the opportunity? It is not always okay for a person with the privilege of education and wealth to write the story of a young indigenous man, filtering the experience of the latter through their own skewed and biased lens, telling a story that likely reinforces an existing narrative which only serves to entrench a disadvantage they need never experience. I am ignoring the pronoun problems. You just can't pay attention to them in modern writing. The kids don't know. Back to the essay. I can't speak for the LGBTQI community, those who are neurodifferent or people with disabilities, but that's also the point. Before I go on, this young woman doesn't use the Oxford comma. So it says, I can't speak for the LGBTQI community, comma, those who are neurodifferent or people with disability, comma, but that's also the point. And reading it, it looks very much as if she is accusing the LGBTQI community of being neurodifferent and with disabilities. I think that's, again, this profound lack of education in modern young writers. Anyway, back to what she said. I don't speak for them and should allow for their voices and experiences to be heard and legitimized. So access, or lack thereof, is one piece. But there is a bigger and broader issue, one that for me is more emotive. And we know emotion always rules over reason. Cultural appropriation is a thing because of our histories. The history of colonization, where everything was taken from a people the world over. Land, wealth, dignity, and now identity is to be taken as well. In making light of the need to hold on to any vestige of identity, Shriver completely disregards not only history but current reality. The reality is that those from marginalized groups, even today, do not get the luxury of defining their own place in a norm that is profoundly white, straight, and often patriarchal. And in demanding that the right to identity should be given up, Shriver epitomized the kind of attitude that led to the normalization of imperialist colonial rule. I want this, and therefore I shall take it. The attitude drips of racial supremacy and The attitude drips of racial supremacy, and the implication is clear. I don't care what you deem is important or sacred. I want to do with it what I will. Your experience is simply a tool for me to use because you are less human than me. She really means because you are less human than I am. The grammar. You are less than human. That was the message I received loud and clear. My own mother, as we walked away from the tent, suggested that perhaps I was being too sensitive. Perhaps. Or perhaps that is the result of decades of being told to be quiet and accept our place. I like the way she suddenly shifted to the royal we. It was one thing, she's too sensitive, but now she's talking about being told to accept our place, the royal we. So our conversation then turned to intent. What was Shriver's intent when she chose to discuss her distaste for the concept of cultural appropriation? Was it to build bridges? To further our intellect? To broaden horizons of what is possible? Her tone, I fear, betrayed otherwise. Okay, now comes my favorite sentence in the entire essay. Humility is not Shriver's cloak of choice. The kind of disrespect for others infused in Lionel Shriver's keynote is the same force that sees people fighting for Pauline Henson. It's the reason our first peoples are still fighting for recognition, and it's the reason we continue to stomach offshore immigration prisons. It's the kind of attitude that lays the foundation for prejudice, for hate, for genocide. I feel it would be useful for this young woman to read Uncle Tom's Cabin, which constituted Harriet Beecher Stowe's often crude cultural appropriation of American blacks and sparked the American conscience so much that it was one of the driving forces that led to the Civil War, which freed African Americans from slavery. Lincoln, when he finally met Harriet Beecher Stowe, apparently said to her, "So you're the little lady who started this great big war." Nowadays, he would have said to her, "That cultural appropriation was disgusting." So it goes. The fact Shriver was given such a prominent platform from which to spew such vitriol shows that we as a society still value this type of rhetoric enough to deem it worthy of a keynote address. The opening of a city's writers' festival could have been graced by any of the brilliant writers and thinkers who challenge us to be more, to be uncomfortable, to progress. See, now, I just thought the entire essay that I've been reading was the young writer's lament that she might be made uncomfortable. I guess I misunderstood. A Maxine Beneba Clark, who opened the Melbourne Writers Festival by challenging us to learn how to talk about race in a way that was melodic and powerful. A Stan Grant, who will ask us why we continue to allow our first peoples to wallow in inhumane conditions. An A.C. Grayling, if you really want the international flavor. Anyone who will ask us to be better, not demand we be okay with worse. Asking to be respected. Is that asking for too much? Apparently, in the world of fiction, it is.